Are you an entrepreneur looking for more free time, more money, or just looking for that success blueprint? The Proven Entrepreneur is the podcast for you. Host Don Williams and his guests share real success stories from proven entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Don Williams.
It's the Proven Entrepreneur Show, and I'm your host, Don Williams. Man, I have got a great guest for you today. Many times we have a guest who's like one of the guys at whatever they do, but today we have the guy, okay, for all things Amazon products, known as my Amazon guy, started his career as a television reporter in Idaho, I think, of all places, and has a 200-plus employee Amazon agency that he founded and runs. And on YouTube, he has a couple of videos, like almost 1,000, that are free content for you to learn how to work on Amazon. And so welcome to the show, Stephen Pope.
Thanks for having me, Don. I appreciate it.
Man, I'm thrilled. Thanks for being here today. I'm excited myself. I'm going to learn something about Amazon. I don't know about Amazon. We'll fill a large book. So I'm thrilled. So tell us a little bit about my Amazon guy, how you got started, what you do, who you serve. Tell us your story.
Happy to do so. So I have an agency called My Amazon Guy that has 200 brands that we fully service, fully manage. Anything that generates traffic, that includes your search engine optimization, your pay-per-click, anything that improves conversion rates, that's your design, catalog management, copywriting, merchandising, that kind of stuff. We have over 220 employees across the world in 10 time zones. It's been a fantastic run. We're just coming up on 4 years, turning 4 years old here next month.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And it's really fun being a founder. I have no idea what I'm doing though, Don.
Well, it sounds to me like if you've gone from no staff to over 200 people in 4 years, it sounds to me like every day you're walking on ground that you didn't walk on before.
That's correct. So it's figure out how to do this today, figure out how to restructure a department tomorrow. And it's like, man, how many different things do you have to do to run a business? And then 13 more just pop up the next week. And then, hey, we're going to double the company again. All right, here's a new barrier. Let's push through that barrier. That's lots of fun. Read 17 business books this month to see how I can become a good to great company somehow. Meanwhile, start an IT department, a sales department for outbound calls, which that's how Don and I got together for this episode. In fact, I was like, hey, Don, I need some of your advice. I'm starting a sales team from scratch. What do I do? And Don gave me a big wow moment. Pay your salespeople as often and as much as you can. That was my wow moment talking to Don last week. After our chat, he invited me to join him on his podcast today.
Yeah, I was so thrilled. So let me take you back to young Stephen, all the way back like age 5 through high school, okay? In the household where you were raised, and that takes different shapes for different folks, but whatever that shape was, in that household, was there an adult who was an entrepreneur, who set an entrepreneurial example for you as a young boy?
No, nobody taught me how to be an entrepreneur. I will say this. My father's a very hard worker, but if you were to read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, he'd be poor dad. So he made lots of money, but he didn't become the entrepreneur, right? Like he was well-educated. He had a degree in meteorology. He became a weatherman. He wanted to be a weatherman since he was a kid, and he did it. And he was on television, had a good career. He actually works for me today now on my sales team, ironically. We can get to that. But when I was 5, I wanted to be an entomologist. And for those non-nerds out there, I wanted to go around and collect bugs and insects, right? Like I was that super nerd kid and I had bug wars and bug fights like praying mantis versus black widow in a jar, ready to go, right? So I liked chaos from a young age. When my mom was a stay-at-home mom, she did PTA and she was there for the kids, all that good stuff. Had 2 brothers, and my older brother, I guess, may have been a slight influence in the sense that all of a sudden this thing called eBay started showing up and he started like hawking goods on eBay. And I'm like, what is going on? What is this? And I was like, I want to get in on that. He's making money over there. So I've never thought about this until you brought this up, Don. So this is all like, you're pulling it out of me. pulling it out of me.
Good, 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 good.
So he started selling like bobbleheads, like Karl Malone, John Stockton, NBA bobbleheads on eBay. I don't even know where he got them, to be honest. Like some guy he knew or something. And I was like, this is really cool. I'm going to open up my own account, do this. And so I ended up, I did that and I bought a GameCube, except the guy I bought it from on eBay didn't ship it for 90 days. So I had one of those experiences. That was like my first e-commerce experience. First product I ever sold though was, and I'm continuing the nerd trend here. First thing I ever sold on eBay or online ever was a Magic the Gathering trading card called the Sliver Queen from the Stronghold Edition. $20 for a 10 or 11 year old kid at the time. And then I got into teaching chess lessons and I started selling chess sets. And I was like, this is really cool. I'm never going to go work at retail. I'm never going to go do any of these boring other retail jobs that all of my peers are doing in high school and junior high. Nope, I bypassed it all. And I taught chess lessons. I was in over 75 different elementary schools in Utah. I had hundreds and hundreds of chess students. And then I found a wholesaler who sold chess sets. And I was like, well, all my chess students need chess sets. I'll just buy them from him. So I bought low and sold high and gave all my chess students chess sets, which was really cool.
Awesome. I love that. Okay. So, and you know, when I first started the podcast, and we're now about 100 interviews in, something like that, I thought that most entrepreneurs would, as children, would have had someone set the example. But it's about half and half. Some did, some didn't. And so that just means that if you didn't, you're just kind of wired that way that ultimately you're going to end up there, I think.
Oh, I'm definitely wired.
Yeah, I agree. I think you are. So tell me this, what was your first job as a child or your first entrepreneurial venture, but the first time that you actually received money?
Well, receiving a lot of money came from the chess teaching and the chess sets, right? I'm sure I took a job, babysit here, babysit there kind of thing. But like I was making 15 bucks an hour as a 12-year-old kid teaching chess lessons, right? And I went around the neighborhood. I had my flyers out. I knocked on doors and I said, hey, it's the summer. Your kids are playing Nintendo right now. Hire me and I will teach them chess and get them to think and use their brain. And they loved that. And I had a huge following. And then they would refer somebody else. And then they would refer somebody else. And it was really cool. So nobody taught me how to do that. I just like, okay, I'm just going to do this. And I started charging for it. People paid me money. And I was like, this is fantastic. And I had money in the bank growing up. Like all my needs were taken care of from my parents. They bought the clothes. They paid for the car. I had that fortunate rearing. So all the money that I made was play money. Got to go out and date, go buy dinners for girls and all that good stuff and go bowling.
Discretionary income.
Discretionary income, 100%.
Yeah, that's the best income. And I wonder how many people in America, you may know, how many people in America have ever played chess?
I'd imagine it's a pretty strong majority. It's probably less than Russia, but it's definitely more than a lot. It's a lot. I mean, anybody that's played a board game ever has probably played chess. So big target audience, everybody always wants to get better at chess, right? So they're like, oh, this Bobby Fischer thing, and there's a Finding Fischer movie and all that cool stuff. And I played very competitively. I played in the Florida US Open back in, I think, 2005 and was ranked really high and did all that fun stuff.
That's awesome.
6-hour chess game, by the way. Those are really long games.
That's really long. Yeah. So I grew up playing chess. We played chess in my mom and dad's house. So my kids, they played chess, but at about 10, I quit playing my younger son because he just had a gear I didn't have. And it's like, okay, I never win anymore. So I'm done. You got to find smarter people to play. And he did. Okay. So leaving your childhood behind, when you graduated high school, you went to university, you climbed Kilimanjaro. You did oceanic exploration for a couple of years. What's your story? What did you do?
So in college, I did debate to pay for college. So I was in collegiate debate. My coolest thing I did was I beat Harvard's B team at a national debate tournament. So I had fun doing that. I won on a cheap shot. They didn't read their plan text and I beat them on that in policy debate. So you got to read your plan. Otherwise, you can't win the debate. So that was important.
It was a technical win.
It was a technical, it was a TKO.
Yeah, technical win.
And it's really interesting to think about because that's what debate is. It's TKOs all the time. Nobody's actually persuaded when they watch debate. ever. And that's, if I went back to college, that's what I would change. I would go back and learn how to persuade. I don't believe that I'm a persuasive individual. I think that I'm right all the time, but I don't think anybody believes me. So if I had to go back to school, I would learn how to persuade. But I did that, and then I broke into television. I coattailed off my father. So he was in weather. I did the hard-hitting investigative reporting. That was my stick. So on a Monday, I might be interviewing the mayor and asking why he has a mistress. True story. And on a Tuesday, I might be in the National Enquirer covering a crazy cat attack. And that's also a true story.
Awesome. I love that. So I have a good friend here in Dallas, Jeff Crilly. And Jeff was a reporter for Fox for maybe 25 years.
Funny you mentioned Jeff.
Oh, you know Jeff?
I hired Jeff as my public relations firm a month ago. And I've been in 30 media appearances since I hired him. In fact, yesterday I was on LA News with a story about people buying Ukraine flags on Amazon.
Yeah. Jeff is a rare talent. And he was a reporter for maybe 20, 25 years. Now he has his own PR company, one of the nicest guys on the planet. And you find that very common in the entrepreneurial community is, yeah, they've got companies and they're making money and they're hiring people. But for the most part, they're just pretty nice people. And Jeff certainly qualifies. And he's got, between the two of you, I know you have some stories that we cannot share here, but fun stuff from that time. And the debate thing, I didn't know that about you either, Stephen. So in high school, so I went to college for 1 minute, maybe two. But in high school, I'm from Kansas, and we were the state runner-up high school debate champions.
Woohoo!
Well, if you were from Kansas and you were in high school debate, it was pretty rare air. And so learn to communicate and communicate clearly. And then, of course, I became one of those sales guys. I didn't even think about it. It's just my normal thing.
Your art of persuasion is probably stronger than mine, I suspect.
I'll humbly say thank you, and I hope so. So, okay, after college, what'd you do?
So I went in to television, became a TV reporter up in Idaho and Wisconsin, did lots of fun stories. I got to fly in a stunt airplane with Greg Poe, which was really cool. I interviewed celebrities like Don Wells and David Archuleta, all kinds of fun things. Then I moved up the guild and I went over to a bigger market in Madison, Wisconsin. I did not last long there. So you said you did college for a minute. I did Wisconsin for a minute.
Yeah.
A big ice storm, biggest blizzard Wisconsin had seen in a decade, hits up in Wisconsin. And I had to do a live weather hit at 10 p.m. at night in the middle of the blizzard. My hair froze. I couldn't see the cameraman. I missed my cue and stared at the entire television market for 20 seconds out in the cold and felt like an idiot. And that was my coming of age moment. That was the moment I said, what in the world am I doing with my life? And for those listening, always looking for that entrepreneurial motivation, many of you are at your desk job right now asking the same damn question. What am I doing with my life right now? That was the moment I decided I was going to stop being a television reporter. I'm going to throw out my college degree and I'm going to find something else. I didn't know what that something else was, but I decided that was the moment. So it didn't take me long. It took me about a month. I ended up actually getting fired from that television station before I quit, right? I was that unfit for being in television. And I decided I'm going to go back to school. So I started a master's in communication. I get in, finish the semester, and I'm like, this is also stupid. Why am I doing this? So then I'm like, I'll just get an MBA. So I transferred over and got an MBA. And I was like, hey, that was cool. Did an MBA in 3.5 months through a program called Western Governors University, competency-based program. So you didn't have to do the bull crap. You just had to prove you knew it. And so I was a lifelong entrepreneur. I sold chess sets. I sold Magic the Gathering cards. I did all those things online. I was like, I know this stuff. So I went and did that, and it worked. The day I finished my MBA degree, I was working at an in-between job as an enrollment counselor at Western Governors University. So I random applied to a job, just needed a job to get back to Utah from Wisconsin. That was that job. And I applied for a leadership position as a team lead in the enrollment division. I just finished my capstone MBA project. I had proven that I could quadruple the retention rate of cold leads. That was my capstone project. And I had a proven process. Not only did I do it, but I gave my own SOP and process to three other people who had similar numbers by following my process. So I was like, I'm going to go into marketing. I'm going to become a leader or whatever. I didn't get the promotion. I walked in and I said, I have all the answers. Follow me. And they said, no. They said, no, we're not going to follow you. And I said, damn, what am I going to do now? So I was like, well, they have a sister company called Straighter Line. What I ended up doing was I reached out and I said, hey, I just finished this capstone project. I could do this for you too. I could increase the amount of students enrolling for you. Hire me as a marketer. And they did. In less than 3 days, I had a job offer for double the money I was making, but I had to drive out to Baltimore, Maryland. And I knew nothing about Baltimore, Maryland. So I'm like, tell me about Baltimore, Maryland. And the first thing you find on the internet is some sketchy TV shows about drug deals in Baltimore, Maryland. So I had high hopes on that one. But I ended up going over to Baltimore, Maryland, did that, and was in a marketing manager position. I bypassed being a specialist. I just was like straight in corporate marketing manager working in corporate America. Super unqualified to do that job. I just had massive drive. And I learned about SEO during that job and did some really cool stuff. I learned like how to drive traffic. But the next four jobs that I had done, I ended up failing at four failed startups in a row. Four failed startups. Every single employer that I had liked me. But for whatever reason, every company failed. Every single one. So I'd go in there, do my thing, felt like I was doing a good job. And then there was something missing from the equation somewhere, somehow. At one company, I worked for the British, dumbest company I ever worked for, called Nisbets. And they sold restaurant equipment. They bought a $5 million warehouse in Baltimore, filled it to the brim. And then they were a $250 million company a year over in the UK, number one dominator beast of a company. They were recession proof. They knew the answers to all the questions. Buy this $5 million warehouse over in America, fill it to the brim with stuff. But just as one example of how dumb this company was, they sent plastic spoons that were so flimsy that if you put the plastic spoon in yogurt, it would bend on the way to your mouth. They were so stupid that they printed catalogs with British language and asked Americans to buy rubbish bins on the front page of the catalog. They were so stupid, they thought they could visit San Francisco in the same day from Baltimore. Just let me just go out. Let me just walk on down over to San Francisco, not having any idea the size of the United States. So I've seen some really stupid stuff on the corporate side. They laid off everybody after, I think it was like 6 or 7, maybe 8 months max while I was at that company. But every single failed startup I did, and that was the dumbest example. I worked for some good startups that just failed anyway. I ended up getting a job offer for minimum 30% higher pay within 7 days every single time. And I was like, cool, it's definitely them, not me, right? Hopefully. So I did one really cool corporate stint at a company called Atmex. I improved their organic traffic by 10 million uniques year over year. That was probably my biggest corporate win in America, because 10 million people showing up to a website that weren't there the previous year is a big number. Felt like I could drive big results. Finally, when the last startup failed, it was a lighting company. They lay me off, give me a 3-month severance. You didn't do anything wrong, Steven. We're just closing shop because our competitors are killing us. And I said, okay, whatever. A lot of people would have taken a vacation. I did not. I said, I'm going to solve my problem in 48 hours. So I made a LinkedIn post and said, hey, I'm going to start doing some consulting. I've been doing this Amazon thing for 8 years, side hustling. And my wife's like, well, what are you going to call this consulting thing? And I said, I don't know. Nobody actually cares who I am. They just say, talk to my Amazon guy. And so she said, that's a great name for a company. And I'm like, really? We're literally folding laundry in the laundry room. She says, yes. So I married well, met her in Baltimore, by the way. So we started an agency in under 48 hours. And within one day of a LinkedIn post, I was on a sales call with a company called FitLife Brands, a supplements company. And I convinced them that I was the answer to all of their problems and that they should hire me and I would grow their sales. And they signed a $3,000 per month contract with me. This was my first contract as an agency. And I'm like, this is fantastic. I have all the answers. I started an agency in under 48 hours and I've got my first contract. Fantastic.
That is good.
It was a lot of hard work. because within 2 weeks, I realized what I signed myself up for. Well, now I'm the guy who makes work for myself, not work for others. I was in the growth center at all these companies I'd worked at for a decade. I've made work for other people my entire career. I am really good at making work for other people. Well, now I'm my own boss. So now I make work for myself. Let me tell you, if you don't have drive, don't become an entrepreneur, because the moment you're an entrepreneur and you start making work for yourself, totally different environment you will find yourself in. I decided within 10 days I had to hire an assistant. That's how quickly I tapped out, Don.
Well, you were smart enough to realize, hey, I'm going to tap.
And the next day, day 11, I had an assistant. So like everything that I do, I make a decision and then I act. The action dictates the strategy would absolutely be my personal motto. Another personal motto that I probably would say would be live long and prosper. I'm ripping off Spock here, and I'm pretty much am Spock because I'm like a 97th percentile introvert, a 99th percentile drive. So like literally super polarized, couldn't be more polarized on the spectrum here. And that means everything's a data point to me. And that this is why I couldn't persuade anybody, Don, because I'm like, you're just a data point. Like, I just need to talk to 100 of you and I get 7 sales and then I'm good, right?
They hate it when you tell them that.
No doesn't mean no or whatever, but it just means not this contract, not this sale, or not now, whatever. So I did that. And within 3 months, I was making 30 grand a month and I started hiring employees. But I have to admit to you, Don, it took a really long time to burn my ships. I will bastardize the actual storyline here, but there's a book out there that talks about a group of people landing in the new world. And to make sure that they knew they couldn't go back to the old world where all of their comforts were, the leader said, we're going to burn the damn ships, and burnt them, just gone, to set the stage that you have to be successful in the new world. Well, I didn't burn my ships for like 6 months. I was still interviewing for jobs because I was like, agency life is so hard. It's the hardest business to run. And by the way, if you ever talk to other businesses, like you talk to a SaaS company, they're always talking about starting an agency. If you talk to a product business, they're always talking about starting an agency. If you talk to an agency, they're always talking about launching a SaaS company. The grass is always greener on the other side.
It's like all actors want to be musicians and all musicians want to be actors. They just think it's so much better over there.
It's not. But I will tell you this, running an agency is the hardest company. There's no doubt about it. I'm 100% confident. If you run a product business, all you need is income and capital. If you're on a SaaS company, you just need a developer, right? So I've got all the answers, of course. All these things are easy.
Well, you do, in fact, have a lot of answers that you have accumulated along your journey. So let me ask you, think back across your career, and I'm looking for a hard lesson, an event or multiple events that happened that at the moment of occurrence or when you were going through those, just like, oh, this is brutal. But maybe today, looking back in retrospect, it turns out it actually propelled you along your journey. Do you have a hard lesson you can share with us?
People. So if you're the data guy, people are hard to work with, right? And so when I was in the corporate world, the corporate board, I was the guy with all the answers. I would show up to the meeting. A question would be asked by the leader, the CEO, whoever. What should we do? I raised my hand every single time. I was like, I know what to do here. You do this. And then what would happen almost every single time? They'd say, yeah, but that's hard work. Yeah, but see, I'm not so sure. And I'm like, no, seriously, here's the data. I just grew your traffic by 10 million uniques. You should do what I say. Like, I have the proven track record. And I'd be in the boardroom and I'd say, look at the data. And then they wouldn't look at the data. They wouldn't believe the data. They would come to their own conclusions and they would resist me. And I'm like, no, you should turn over the entire website to me and give me full control. And here's what I'll do with it. This is what happens when you have maximum autonomy and no team player inside of you. And so I could not work in the corporate world effectively. When I became the boss, things got easier in some ways, but harder in others. And I have no idea, like when I first started hiring random people, I was like, okay, you're in my church, cool. Okay, you're within 5 minutes of me, you're a neighbor, cool, I'm hiring you. Come to my house. We're just gonna stick desks in my office here. We're all going to work together. And I ended up finishing a basement of my house, and I stuck at the max we hit was 11. I had 11 employees literally in the basement of my house. Now, mind you, this was a nice basement. It was like nicer than most corporate businesses. There were windows, right? Like nice new desk, completely new finished corporate environment.
Your wife was pretty thrilled about the 11 people who came over every day, worked in the basement. Yeah, she liked that.
Oh, yes. Yes. It was the first employee that she was most pissed about. She's like, this is my sacred territory and you're bringing work to my home. I have four kids, six and under, and tying live long and prosper back to that. Everything that I do must be successful. Everything must be prosperous. So I don't just run my business this way. I run everything this way. Like I can't tell the difference between my personal life, my work life, and my family life, my spiritual life, because they're all the same way. And so when I started to merge them, though, my wife was a little resistant, suffice it to say. Now, the irony here is, so I started hiring people. I didn't know, I made lots of terrible hires, like just absolute garbage. Like I had no idea what I was doing. I got really lucky in my first few hires, but then as it started to scale, I didn't do too well as it started to scale. So finally hit employee number 11 there. The fire marshal shows up and says, hey, you're illegally running a business out of your house. And I'm like, yeah, that's me. And he says, yeah, you have 48 hours to vacate the property. I'm like, ouch. So I had to become a remote business overnight, which is fine because as you heard from all these other examples, I made a decision and then within 48 hours, I had the solution. Now we're a remote business hiring people. So I had to learn how to hire people without ever meeting them in face-to-face and manage them without being face-to-face. This was all pre-COVID, mind you, right? So I had to solve problems that nobody had solved before, let alone me solve them. Long story short, because I rambled on this one, I had to find a data-centric way to make talent hiring and management a scalable process. For me, the answer was Culture Index. And so I give everybody this two-question survey, takes them 5 minutes, and I know what motivates them and can within 30 seconds dictate whether they're going to be a fit for my company. It's a brutal process. Knocks out 75% of the people that apply. But it freaking works. And I got 220 employees with data points that says it does.
And all of us are in the people business. I don't care what we do. We're all in the people business.
Unless you're a SaaS company with one developer.
And even then, people got to buy it. We're all in the people business. And so Culture Index, great tool based on 100-year-old research. But that's based on stuff that goes back to Aristotle and Socrates. And I mean, there's just a limited amount of personalities and helps you get the right butts in the right seats. I think that is close to their unofficial tagline.
Yeah, pretty much. So I keep traction on the side of my desk here. I quote from it frequently. I have extreme ownership behind me up there on the desk. Measure What Matters, Numbers, which was written by an EO guy. These are all books that I live in that right now. And we just demoted one of our leaders, and I had to say, hey, I need you to read chapter 2 of Extreme Ownership, and let's have a chat about this, right? And so like, there's ways to move people up and down. There's ways to get people in the right seats and move it all around. It is absolute chaos all the time at agencies. So I hire impatient, eager individuals all the time. And I hire detail-oriented individuals because we have nonstop deliverables to our clients. If I can't maintain that at scale, I will lose clients. So my mistake was I'm face blind. I can't read a room. And I needed a data tool to deliver scale to my weakness. That's what I overcame. And now I'm a culture zealot. And I talk nonstop about core values. And I rolled out a core value of impatience to my business a year ago, which has massive negative connotations. And I rebranded it about 2 months ago. It's now eagerness. So like, it's just a constant evolution to try and make sure we hire the right people. So I run a people business.
Yeah, I love that. And I have a friend here in Dallas-Fort Worth that is the number one real estate broker in the state and maybe number 5 or 6 in the country. I mean, he does a ton of residential and commercial real estate. And talking about Culture Index, he requires that his clients take the assessment so that they know the best method to communicate to deliver what the client actually wants.
I do that for my clients too, actually. And I need to hire that guy. I need that real estate agent because
I'll connect you. He literally helps people buy and sell real estate all around the world based in Fort Worth, Texas. But he's like, hey, all the real estate's not in Fort Worth, Texas. It's everywhere. And so he helps them everywhere. Okay, great. All right, let's talk about a warp speed moment. Things are going along pretty good in your business. Okay, you make a couple of hires, you change a strategy, you do a 48-hour implementation, but all of a sudden, even though things are going well, now you just have hockey stick explosive growth. Do you have a warp speed moment? And Mr. Spock would certainly understand the term.
Yes. So here's the thing. I don't have a warp speed one or two. It's warp speed 9 all the time. So when you ask for the warp speed moment, that's the last 4 years of my life. Like, that's it. It's like, there was no pause. There was no stop. I haven't taken a vacation in 4 years. Like, if there was one cup that's a little less full than it should be, it would be time to take care of my own personal self and go take a vacation. That's the one thing I need to correct later this year. But the warp speed has just been nonstop growth in a growth sector. The Amazon space is an absolute just gauntlet of growth, right? Half the economy goes through Amazon. They have vertical control.
Half the economy?
Half the economy, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And if you think about it, it's not just half of the things are being bought and sold in Amazon, but Amazon also controls all of the data. I mean, like, they're in bed with the CIA and they run the government's data even, right? Like, they're the largest monopoly that has ever existed. They're not the most profitable company in the world. I think Apple still has that win. But Amazon is the largest, most important company in the United States, without a doubt. And it has more control. It has vertical control in logistics now. They're buying boats. They're buying planes. They're going to put FedEx out of business, right? Like, they're doing so many massive things. They have all of these fulfillment centers across the country. So I'm in literally the fastest growing sector, in my opinion. There's so much growth in my space, Don, that I estimate, this is a made up number on my part, but I'm pretty sure I'm right because I'm right about everything.
Hey, on Amazon, I'm pretty sure you are.
There are 50,000 jobs we are short. 50,000 jobs that cannot be fulfilled in the Amazon sector. And that has been such a hard thing to deal with and manage that I had to hire 60 interns in 60 days. I just completed this capstone project, another big, hairy, audacious goal. And if we don't start telling people to go to college for Amazon sales or to train them, the entire sector is going to implode, right? We have, on the left, $13 billion have entered my space in the form of just one sector of Amazon aggregators. I made a website, amazonaggregators.com, if you're curious, where 100 different companies, venture capital mostly, came in and started buying Amazon brands, the largest of which is Thrasio with a $2.5 billion capital raise. They are so big that at least 40% of the households in this country have received an item from a brand that Thrasio owns in the last 12 months. And they're going to be a household name in 5 years, Thrasio. There's many, many other ones, Perch, Boosted, Heyday, a laundry list of like 100 more. I've interviewed half of them, many on my podcast, because I was wondering, am I going to end up working from an aggregator like soon? Like, that was like just this massive sector change happening. I decided no. The answer to that question was no. I'm never working for anybody ever again. But we have, so I'm building the whole Gary Vee style. Anyway, so on the left, you've got $13 billion in Amazon aggregators in the space. On the right, you have the Chinese going direct to consumer for the first time, selling commodity products at dirt cheap prices. And then on the top, you have Amazon squeezing the mom and pop seller, and they're making policies and making it harder to even run the business to begin with. So Amazon is entering its maturity phase right now. Never been a better time to sell on Amazon, but also never been a harder time. So this concept that Amazon is hashtag passive income, I will criticize that all day long. Also, it's job security for me. Amazon is the number one customer-centric company in the world. Nobody serves its customers better than Amazon, bar none. But it treats its sellers like dog crap, absolute garbage, which is why I'm in business. And that's why I created my Amazon guide, because we can navigate all of those challenges and overcome them.
Very insightful. I didn't know that, but I will say this in one of my talks that I give from the stage on romancing your customer, which is about treating customers the way they want to be treated, just like treat my wife the way she wants to be treated. That's romantic, is seeing things from the other person's point of view. And I tell the crowd, I can tell you your two biggest competitors, and I don't care what business you're in. And they always want to know, who are they? And I'm like, well, it's Amazon and it's Google. and it's Google, because they give you an answer to any question you want in 2/2700 of a second, and they're probably right. And so that perpetuates instant gratification, and it's almost impossible for everybody else to even come close to. And then when you think about Amazon, with as quick of a search, deliver me umpteen zillion choices, tell me what they recommend, I can buy in with one click, and 2 days later, and maybe even the same day, depending on what it is, it's on my doorstep. And if I need to send it back, it's no problem. And you're just like, wow, when you talk about delivering exceptional experiences where customers say, wow, that was amazing, they're the best. There's nobody who can touch them.
And Don, you are the wow guy, so you would know. So first company, if you're not on Amazon, you're irrelevant, right? If you're a product business. And they were the first company to solve two-day nationwide delivery. And 2 days was too slow, Don. I can't wait 2 days. So then there was next day delivery nationwide. But wait a minute, Don. Next day delivery, too slow. So now they have Prime Now, where you get stuff in 2 hours. My wife had a hankering for French fries. And she ordered Prime Now, a dry fryer, and it was on our doorstep in 1 hour and 36 minutes.
Yeah. So my wife is a little frustrated with me because I may never go to another store ever again for anything.
Are you introverted like me, Don? Or
and so, you know, I'm a speaker and a facilitator and a coach, but I'm a very hard introvert.
That makes you a great world-class presenter, though. Introverts are the best presenters.
Well, I think we have some unique skills. And Sharon Berkman, her father founded the Berkman Method, which is Myers-Briggs-ish and Culture Index and all that. And she can talk at great length about the inner strengths of introverts. And of course, the flip side, the weaknesses of the introvert is I can be as gregarious and charming as anybody on the planet, maybe more than most, but it just drains me.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. If I speak on the stage, I literally will not speak to my wife that day. I won't speak to anybody. So that when I go to the stage, my batteries are on full charge. And when I leave the stage, I'll have about 5% power left. It'll be Captain Kirk saying, Scotty, I've got to have more power. And Scotty says, hey, buddy, we're about out. Say your thank yous, kiss the babies, shake the hands, and get out of here because you're going to pass out pretty quick. And so that's just the way it goes. Okay, so I reserve the right to recall you, okay, because we're not going to get everything done I want to explore in the time we have today. But for this next piece, I want to put you in a time machine and transport you back through time and give you the opportunity to share some wisdom with 20-year-old Stephen. Okay, so a thought or two, something you know now, you didn't know then, that it would have been helpful to know then if you would have listened to yourself. And sometimes 20-year-olds, that's a challenge. But into the time machine you go, all the way back. Here's 20-year-old Stephen. What wisdom do you share?
College is a waste of time. Don't become a television reporter and start your business at age 18.
There you go. There you go. And mothers and fathers all across America are saying, la, 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 la. And I thought I was going to be an engineer. Math and science were always my strong points. I never took a book home in my life. Academia liked me. I was one of those kids who was going to bring in exceptional grades. But I took a sales job at 18. And in 6 months, I was making more money than my parents.
So that would have been me.
And 3 or 4 months after that, I was the number one guy in the country at age 19 out of 450 salespeople. And I looked at what I would make after another 3.5 years of college as an engineer. It's like, I make more than that now. And so
being an entrepreneur is not for everybody, but for the true born ones, don't waste your time. Just do it.
Yeah. Because they won't be happy doing anything but. Entrepreneurship is one of those things where you work 135 hours a week for yourself, maybe for nothing, okay, as opposed to working 40 hours a week for somebody else for something. And so, but if it's your calling, if it's your zone of genius, if it's your purpose, you cannot be happy, you cannot be content unless you follow that purpose. So, Stephen, how can we support you? How do we reach you? What's the easiest way to connect?
Well, if you liked what you heard today and you just want to say hello, send me an email to podcast@myamazonguy.com. And if you're an Amazon seller listening to this, I love your business. I think we could grow your sales. I can grow anybody's sales. And we'll give you peace of mind that it's all taken care of so you can focus on your business. Check us out at myamazonguy.com. If you're a culture index nut, I just like to geek out on that stuff. Hit me up on that too. And we have 900 videos of content over on YouTube where I talk about how to run a company, how to grow sales on Amazon. And it's super technical in the weeds and it's built like a television reporter. So it's like 2 and 3 minute sound bites in and out.
Love that. Love that. Okay. Well, I think that takes us to the finish line. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been my distinct pleasure. And I do reserve the right to recall the witness. I would like to have you back and we'll cross some other bridges. Hey, folks, that's today's episode of the Proven Entrepreneur Show. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
That's today's episode of The Proven Entrepreneur. Go to provenentrepreneurshow.com, subscribe to the show, leave an iTunes review, and you could win a $25,000 VIP day in Dallas with Don himself. And get Don's easier and faster selling with video course free. Please join Don on the next episode of The Proven Entrepreneur.